Welcome to TTM Cast, your sports collectibles podcast.
Sponsored by CGC Cards, card grading all in one place. CGC Cards is devoted to expert grading of collectible cards, including TCGs, sports cards, and non-sports cards.
And by SportsCollectorsDaily.com. If it happens in the hobby, you'll find it on SportsCollectorsDaily.com. And sponsored by GemRate.com. The latest grading statistic from the four major grading companies is just a click away. Visit GemRate.com. It's free.
And now, here's our host, Drew Pelto.
Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to TTM Cast, your sports collectibles podcast, where we talk about all things related to TTM, cards, autographs, collecting, and a whole lot more. Whatever comes up during the week, whatever we feel like talking about, whatever we want to put in there, we're going to cover it. This is season number 6, episode 13. We're here on April the 13th, and you're listening to a nationally ranked sports collectibles podcast. I am Drew Pelto, coming to you from North Texas, right down here in the DFW area. And I'm joined here. We've got a guest co-host this week as Troy is out. Paul Buxton joining us from up in Seattle. Longtime hockey collector, well-known in the TTM and hockey autograph community there. I mean, you've been involved in this for longer than most of us. I mean, when did you come out with your website first? Around like the late 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've been around since, I think, 99 or 2000. It's kind of when I got into it. I was in high school and growing up in San Jose, we had the Sharks there and kind of figured out how to get autographs, both TTM in person. I learned a lot from the early autograph sites back then that were mostly TTM and in-person stuff. I just sort of figured out as I went along and then really in the early days of the autograph community online, people just sort of emailed each other and we sort of connected in the era before social media. So I made a lot of great connections, including with you and many others. And that was a great way to build a collection in those days. So, I've been doing this quite a long time now, as it turns out, I guess 25 years or so.
Yeah, you're online at Trader's Bazaar there. I met a lot of people through there that I still am in contact with today. I know Corey Mansfield was one of the ones who's on there, big Islanders collector, and he and I have traded for, God, just about as long as I've known you for there. Yeah. So cool. Tell people just real quick before we get into things, where can they find you online if they want to give you a follow?
So I'm in a couple places. For hobby purposes, it's really about my hockey autograph collection, and my old website name still sort of lives on, and my Instagram is Hockey Autograph Mania. So that's where I post everything about autograph returns. I do in-person and TTM, although being kind of a relatively new father now, don't have a whole lot of time to do either one, but I do get a chance here and there to add some stuff. So I'll put I put a fair bit out on there. And then in terms of like Twitter/X, I'm on there at Paul Bux, PaulBux. And that's more geared towards kind of the Seattle Kraken fan community up here. I was pretty involved in that fan community as the team sort of not only rolled out, but I was really pretty active in the community that was trying to get a team. So there's a lot of just a lot of hockey content on there that I kind of share, mostly my experience being a fan up here. And I do sprinkle a little hobby stuff in there, though, once in a while.
Yeah, this is your second appearance on the show now. You did an interview a couple years ago with Jeff. So any fans who want to go back and get further into depth on Paul's collection, definitely go and check that out. I don't have it right on hand here, which episode that was, but it's been in the last, 2 years or so, I think, if I remember right.
Would have been probably August of 2021 or something back then. We had just gotten through the expansion draft and we're sort of prepping for the season ahead.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a look at just some quick news bites here from the week. It's funny. Most weeks we've got like almost nothing to talk about in this section because it's like kind of in that dead spot where it's like, you know, we've got the NFL draft is still ahead of us. The season of the NFL is behind us. Hockey's kind of been in a dead spot up until now when you have the playoff run. And now suddenly four big stories that are right here on college basketball, the men and women both crowned champions this past week with South Carolina on the women's side and UConn on the men's side. I know you're a big Gonzaga fan. Unfortunately, they bowed out early. You guys didn't even sniff the tournament at all. But
yeah,
I thought it was pretty good, though, to watch on both sides there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I went to Gonzaga up here in the Northwest. And, that may as well be Spokane, Washington's, like, pro team. I mean, they live and breathe it there. And You know, as I've gotten away from college, I've paid attention like less and less and like more to hockey. And then as I pay attention less and less, they seem to do better. At least, you know, when I was going there, they barely made the Sweet 16. They get bounced pretty early every year. And then, like, you know, recently we've had some runs. This year it was a little bit of a down year for the Zags. I think we struggled through the conference a little bit. We're expected to win every single game because we play in a, you know, a mid-major conference, and St. Mary's was our other rival team, and they did pretty well this year. So there was some question, you know, were we even going to get in if we, you know, if we didn't win out our tournament. But sure enough, we got in there as a five. I saw 5 and 5 and 12 is usually like kind of a upset zone, you know. Yep. I think statistically 5-12, everyone sort of looks and thinks, oh well, there might be something going on. But we cruised past that team, and I think you know, I think we exceeded expectations, believe it or not, for how the season went for the Zags. I
definitely
Houston.
Would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I picked in terms of the bracket, I just sort of filled it out at the last second. And, you know, I always sort of, I like to, just as a joke, throw the Zags into the Final Four every year, just as a homer thing, even though I know it's not going to happen maybe, but, and then I picked, I think, Houston randomly to go all the way. And I think they bounced up pretty early, but, yeah.
I had Kentucky going all the way, and they got bounced the first day, so I feel the pain there.
Oh, God,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. I think one side of my bracket was great. Like, I had a region that was all green the first day, and then the other regions were just bright red.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, a little baseball news early on here as well. I've been seeing a lot of early injuries to pitchers here early on. Don't know how closely you've been following anything there, but I know at least Shane Bieber done for the season with Tommy John surgery. A couple other big ones as well that are out there that are up on the shelf. We've actually got a Justin Verlander's doing a rehab start in Frisco today, which I am not going to go to now. That's getting crazy, but really weird to see here early on with all the injuries there.
Yeah, I'm not a baseball guy, but I know I do remember when I used to do minor league baseball, there was one or two times where a guy like that would get sent back to single A, like single A in the Cal League, and everybody was just magically appearing to try to graph that guy, just like walking out the front door where you can get autographs and have some fun memories there.
Frisco said 9,000 tickets were sold in the last day just for today's game because of Verlander's start and Nathaniel Lowe being down from the Rangers as well. So as soon as I heard the number, when I heard it hit 4,000, I'm like, yeah, I don't know about this. And 9,000 was like, nope, that's no chance. No way.
Sounds wild to me.
Yeah. Hockey news, a lot of stuff going on here. The, personal one right here. Sidney Crosby two nights ago not only moves into 10th on the all-time scoring list, passing Phil Esposito there, but 1,000 career assists, which is, I mean, that is a huge number. And it's crazy because I was looking at the top 10 scorers of all time so far, and right now he has the second fewest goals of any of the top 10 scorers, which really surprised me there. But a couple big milestones there for him.
I mean, he's a legend. He's your guy, right? And
right. Yep.
And it's crazy just to see how, you know, that sort of speaks to his playmaking ability and sort of how he makes everyone around him better, you know, through the years, and to do that all with one team also. He bounced my Sharks in 2016, and so I got to see that and see a cup being raised in San Jose, but it just wasn't us, but that's okay. And it's great that, and I saw that you got his autograph this year, and I was also fortunate this year up in Seattle to get him before he did it pregame. And I went down there with really the last second with no expectations really. And there are a lot of people there and stuff, and he still did it. So I was pleasantly surprised about that.
Good. And the biggest surprise of me to this week, the Arizona Coyotes news, it just seemed to pop up out of nowhere that they're talking about, hey, we might be moving to Salt Lake City. And I'm like, wait, what? Hold on a second. Every piece of news, it seems like, comes with either Houston, Kansas City, Portland, Quebec City occasionally, but Salt Lake City out of nowhere. And apparently it's been made official that it is going to happen. The players were told yesterday, and now it's hitting the news that, yes, that sale is happening. Where did this come from? Wow. I mean, they had to move, obviously, but Salt Lake City. Wow.
It's I've been following it a little bit because and I'll talk about it more on a kind of tell y'all what I've been up to, but the Utah thing had been in the works a little bit, but people sort of didn't expect it to be now. Like, you know, Ryan Smith is the owner of the Jazz in Utah, and you know, he's a CEO of a tech company there, Qualtrics, and Seems like a real an owner the league wants to have. He's very kind of thought forward and very, you know, engaged with the fans. He seems like a good owner already in the NBA, and so he has just sort of said, hey, like, we're ready, and we have an arena plan in the works. It's actually approved by the local legislature and everything in Utah. So there's like local support for a new arena in the right time frame. And so that's sort of in the back pocket of the NHL. Meanwhile, Arizona is just a complete tire fire, right? They're, exactly. You know, there's Mullet Arena, and I'll talk more about that in a sec, but, you know, they're playing Mullet Arena. They had the vote in Tempe, Arizona last year that failed, where they were trying to build an arena, and the voters said, we'd rather have this toxic, vacant land sitting there. Despite it being a good location, a team would do pretty well there in the right condition. And then ownership had issues with a lot of things that I think most ownership groups don't have problems with, like paying hotel bills, dealing with, the Glendale lease thing a couple years ago. It's been a really kind of a rocky situation there. So there's not a lot of confidence that the ownership group has what it takes to roll out this newest plan, the North Phoenix Entertainment District off Loop 101. That's up in the north of, kind of right on border to Scottsdale, but it's really Phoenix. And so there's like this auction they have to do. The state is going to have an auction for the land, but that's in June. So the time frame doesn't really work for really next season. There's not enough of confidence in the ownership's ability to pull off that entertainment district. Are they going to win it? And is that means 3 to 5 more years in Mullet Arena, right? Seems like a very suboptimal situation. Players don't want to be playing there in the NHL for an extended period of time. So I think that's the main driving force behind this sudden move, I think.
Yeah, I'm just surprised they've lasted that long. I mean, going through one bankruptcy already, all the arena issues. I'm surprised it didn't happen years earlier, but... Yeah. I mean, hopefully it works out there with Utah. I mean, there's an instant geographic rival there with Colorado as well. So that'll be good to see.
Also, it's smart that the NHL is looking at that. Utah, the Salt Lake area is a pretty rapidly growing market. Lots of people are moving there. There's some economic benefit. So there's a good amount of tech there. So there's growth. There's, so the NHL always sort of sometimes they look at those sort of markets with interest. So. In the right, right ownership, right arena. They'll have to play at Delta Center, which is, not a good hockey building. It's like Barclays, basically. But as long as I'd say, like, as long as they have a plan to only be there for like 2 seasons, and make it clear that we're going to get a nice new arena, kind of like many other teams have done, they should be good.
I mean, it's better than having an arena that has seating in the 4 figures. So that's definitely a step up, I would think. Well, taking a look at just what we had going on in our weeks in collecting. Like I said, I was originally going to go to a minor league game tonight. That 9,000 person crowd has scared me off. So I'm going to be waiting a couple weeks there to make my graphing debut, unfortunately. Still been getting a little lazy on the TTMs. Hopefully now that I'm not doing anything tonight, I can get caught up on those and maybe mail about 30 of them out like I've been planning to for a month now. And got a couple of other events, though, at least coming up and picking up some cards for those. So hopefully I have some big in-person graphing successes to talk about in the next few weeks on some Hall of Famers rookie cards. Not going to give away too many names there just yet, but there's a big event in the Dallas area here that hopefully I'm going to have some success with. But Paul, what do you got going on? I know you've done some in-person stuff here, it looks like.
Near the end of the season, usually it's when it's sort of winding down, but I had a couple of pretty great experiences in person. So we were talking about the Coyotes. I actually flew down to Phoenix for, it's literally a 24-hour little trip there, mainly
you avoided my meth hotel, right?
No, yeah, I had asked Drew about which hotel to stay in. Yeah. He stayed in some, sketch one, and it was decent. It was great. I went down there and mainly wanted to go to just experience the Mullet Arena, which is going to be such a interesting thing in NHL history to talk about. And I know that, now seeing the news, I'm glad I went because it is smaller than it looks in pictures and video. It is cozy. It's a great Division I college rink. They have Arizona State has it set up very nicely for them. So as a college rink, it's awesome. As an NHL rink, of course not. I mean, there are pictures of so the concourses don't go all the way around, and to call them concourses would be putting it a little, you know, generously. You kind of go in at the bottom of the bottom of the building, and immediately that little foyer there is like a, kind of a junior A rink lobby, and you go up some escalators to the actual main concourse, which goes only three quarters of the way around because one side is a club section. And that concourse is literally just the top of the rink, kind of like it rings the top and you can kind of see down and stuff. And so just to go through there and see and experience NHL there was already kind of incredible. And before the game, I went down and found the Kraken, pregame bus. And it's in downtown Tempe. It's on Mill Ave down there. And surprisingly difficult access. You know, sometimes hotel access, it really varies. You know, you'll get ones that are city hotels where it's sidewalks. Those are typically the best. Yep. And then in Phoenix, it's a mix between that and these big, huge complex resorts where you can't even go, right? So this one was sort of in the middle. I got a couple autographs from the Kraken on the road. It's always just mainly good to see them and show support. And my main white whale I've been trying to get is Jaden Schwartz. Of all the Kraken players, he is the most elusive. You know, he just is not much of a stopper after practice. And so I was hoping to get him to sign my flag project, which I don't know if I've mentioned to you or much, but I have a project that it's a big 3x5 foot Kraken flag. It's like light blue color.
Yep.
And I have been trying to get that signed by every member of the franchise. So moving forward, I'll get every single player who's ever played for the Kraken officially, regular season playoffs, on there. I don't try for them typically until they actually play. And I'm up to, as of the Arizona game, I was 52 out of 59, and Schwartz was the only player that I needed, the current player. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't get him there. I still need him. But the next thing, I guess quickly, my next in-person was the beginning of this month. I went up to Abbotsford, BC, which is suburban Vancouver. But for me in Seattle, it's a 2-hour drive and just over the border. Literally, the arena is 2 miles from the border crossing. And so like barely into Canada. And Coachella Valley Firebirds, the Kraken minor league team, was playing up there that weekend. So it's always a good chance to clean up on the prospects. And so I went up there and got two autographs on the flag. So I got Andrew Podorowski, sort of a career AHL guy, but really not good signer. And he's won, like, I think, two Calder Cups and appeared in three Calder Cup finals in the last 5 years. So he's, like, prolific in the AHL.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other guy, Marian Studenich, he's from, I believe, the Czech Republic, and played two games of the Kraken, got sent down. Not so sure what his future is in the AHL, so I wanted to make sure to get him. And then went to the rink in Abbotsford. It's very easy for autographs. So I went over there and got everybody I needed, pretty much. They sent Jonathan Lekaramäki, the first overall or the first round pick from the Canucks recently. He got sent there. And then there's another Elias Pettersson in the Vancouver system, which is pretty hilarious. He's a defenseman, spelled the same way. They drafted him, I think, in, I want to say, the third round of the draft recently. And so they sent him to Abbotsford. And I actually printed up a 4x6 that just says in, like, kind of meme font, Comic Sans or Impact font. I had it just says both Elias Petterssons with an exclamation point.
Nice.
And I had, you know, who they call DPD, so the defensive Elias Pettersson, sign it. And then I plan to next season get, the elder Elias Pettersson in Vancouver to sign it. I think it'd be great. I also have both Sebastian Aho's laying around somewhere that I need to get the Swedish one to sign. So,
yeah,
like to have fun with stuff like that once in a while.
Exactly. It's always fun to come with, like, weird dual projects like that. I actually mentioned last week about racing two players TTM, like sending out to both pitchers named Greg Harris on the same day and seeing who comes back quickest, or Bryn Smith and Zane Smith, both former Expos pitchers in 1990, and sending them out the same day and having them come back the same day, which completely blew my mind. But yeah, it's always fun doing stuff like that. If you're not having fun with it, then why do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, we've got a great show for you this week. Coming up in Collector's Corner, I am joined by Andrew Lowe talking about his collection and his baseball career as well. He's a former college player. He's done some umpiring and all that kind of stuff there. So make sure you stick around and check that out coming up in just a bit. Before we get to him, though, we have, of course, Baker's Dozen, where we cover all of the news from the previous week in collectibles. And we've got a lot of it here this week. After that, we're going to have Making the Grade after we talk to Andrew. We'll talk about all things grading. We're going to be joined, actually, of course, by Ryan Stuzinski of the great site Gemrate, where he's going to cover the big three for us this week. We also have Stamp Approval. Paul and I give our thumbs up to something from the previous week. Could be just about anything. You never know what it's going to be whenever we get into that, so make sure you give that a listen. We have the Vern Rap Minute covering deaths in the world of sports, celebrity, music, movies, politics. Anybody you might consider TTMing, we'll let you know if they've passed away. And, of course, why are we all here? Our TTM returns to finish things out. If you want to get in contact with us here, there's a couple easy ways to do that. Paul, what is the email address here for our show?
That would be ttmcast@yahoo.com.
Go. So any questions, comments, if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, let us know. I've got Les Wolf coming on next week, and if there's something you want to hear Les talk about, you serve it up to him and he'll just go crazy with it. So let us know if you got anything on your mind there. If you want to hit me directly, it's dfwgraffer@gmail.com. Right now, though, we're going to move on into Baker's Dozen.
Baker's Dozen, sponsored by sportscollectorsdaily.com.
Smart collectors turn to Sports Collectors Daily to stay up to date. From new releases to incredible collections hitting the auction block, news from inside the business of sports collectibles, and much more, Sports Collectors Daily has it, all with no subscription cost. SC Daily also delivers a live look at the most watched sports card auctions on eBay for every sport. Sign up to get the headlines in your email for free, or just visit the website whenever you like. With 16,000 stories in the archive going back 16 years, there is always plenty to read at sportscollectorsdaily.com.
Baker's Dozen is a news summary of all things related to collectibles news from the previous week. I want to remind you, Five Star Dynasty, the game that my friend Amir Kim El Malawani has come up with, is still out there and available for order. FiveStarDynasty.com. Instagram is Five Star Dynasty Game. If you put in your order, make sure you message him on Instagram. Let him know you're a TTM Cast listener. They might have a bonus for you whenever they get those shipped out. I know that's coming up soon. I just talked to him here earlier this week about what's going on there. Hopefully have some more updates for you on that very soon. Also, make sure you read sportscollectorsdaily.com. I write a weekly article for them on all things TTM and whatever other autograph topics come to mind during the week. I was hoping I'd have some in-person graphing to write about here for this week's article. So now I'm back to square one of trying to figure out what I'm going to fill that with, but I'm sure I'll come up with something. Sportscollectorsdaily.com. Go and check those out. We got some hobby news here, and one that I didn't get into the rundown here because I just read it this morning. Paul, have you followed any of the stuff that's happened with the 1979-80 Opeachy case that got sold at, I think it was Heritage Auctions sold it about maybe a month and a half ago, something like that?
I haven't seen the latest, but I do remember kind of following the massive sort of interest that there was to see that there was something like this out there in the wild, and then, what it sold for, and just kind of you think through how many Gretzky's are in there, and what are their quality,
on that. Well, they're saying potentially 25 Gretzky's in there, and the seller has paid for it and has told Heritage, hey, hang on to it for me here for a bit. I mean, keep it in the vault there for at least a little bit there. And now he's saying, I'm not sure I want it. It's like, hold on a second. You just threw down almost $4 million on this thing, and now you're saying that you don't want it. I guess he's not a collector at all. He already has a Gretzky rookie card, and he was hoping to buy it, I guess, and flip it real quick or something like that, or maybe that he would have more interest after he officially got it. They've talked to the next bidder behind there, who was kind of mad that he didn't get it, so they're hoping maybe he would be interested in buying it, but he hasn't ponied up the gap in the money there at all. And it's just kind of sitting there right now. The guy doesn't want it after paying for it, and it's just kind of turning into this potential for a really bizarre saga. He said something about possibly giving it to this woman that he knows that he considered like his absolute soulmate or something like that, who's a big hockey fan. And it's like that came out of nowhere. It's starting to turn a little bit creepy there, but it's just a really bizarre story. And I'm like, I want more of this. I'm definitely going to keep my eye on this no matter what happens with it here.
Yeah. It sounds like something you should grab some popcorn for. It feels like we're peeking into the, like the DMs of an eBay deal gone wrong, and something that we'll see where it goes.
Next week for more As the Gretzky Turns. We've got some bigger hobby news coming out. It's going to affect all of us, unfortunately. And Louis DeJoy, boo this man. USPS,
this man.
Price of stamps is going up to 73 cents now for postage, which their 5-cent hike there is among their largest ones ever. But when you look at things, it's still cheaper than a lot of the rest of the world for domestic postage. I mean, the Canada, it's basically the American equivalent of 78 cents there. Australia, it's the equivalent of 97 cents. Finland is the equivalent of $2.50 American. So we're really not that bad off. But still, you look at this, you go, oh, come on, not again. Jeez.
Just keeps happening.
Yeah. So it's about a 7.8% increase all across the board, and it's likely to take effect right around July 14th. Got a little auction news here, Paul. What do you got here on this one?
Let's see. We've got McGinnis Auctions of New Hampshire. They're putting up a large collection of pre-war tobacco and gum cards to benefit the UNH, the University of New Hampshire Scholarship Fund. Looks like there are 300 T206 cards there. Most are graded between 2.5 to 3, around that range. There's also a 1933 Gaudi Babe Ruth that's graded a 3.5. They also have two ticket stubs from the first game ever at Fenway, which is pretty cool. That's a cool piece to remember. Pre-bidding is on now at paulmcginnis.com, M-C-I-N-N-I-S, paulmcginnis.com.
I'd be interested in that. I mean, you think 2.5 to 3, and it's like, that's pretty crappy. But for a T206, that's pretty darn good right there. Those always look good no matter what.
Ones.
Yeah. We got some Panini news here that I kind of teased a little bit last week, so I knew it was coming, but it hadn't been made public yet, and it is finally out there. They have added to their women's basketball roster. They, of course, had a big deal with Caitlin Clark a couple of weeks ago, and now Angel Reese has signed to a multi-year deal. The LSU, I believe, center or forward she played for them is going to be going into the WNBA draft here this year. They've already said she's definitely going to be one of the top 8 picks there, and probably higher. I've heard even top 3 on her, but an instant card of her has already launched. They're going to have some autographs coming soon on Panini's site. And of course, she'll be in all the upcoming WNBA products. Their season starts May 14th. And once we know where she goes in the draft, we'll know if there's going to be when exactly the Reese versus Clark pro matchups are going to happen. We got those once a year in college the last couple of years, but going to see those pro matchups a couple times there. And I know basketball fans are definitely excited to see that coming up here soon.
Yeah, I know that just like I've seen just the numbers from that championship game, the viewership was incredible. And the WNBA is going to get a huge boost for it. I know that in Seattle here, the Seattle Storm game against the Indiana Fever, which is presumptively where like Caitlin Clark's going to go, that has already almost sold out, and the entire arena, so 17,000. So they opened the upper bowl. So definitely it's cool to see this, and it's just good. It's good for the hobby, and it's good for the game. Like, pretty awesome. If you picked up any 2024 Topps Heritage, you might have noticed there's an error. So card number 149 is red Shane Dienst, and supposed to be, but it actually shows Whitey Herzog. So the error hasn't been corrected. There's not going to be much of a value premium there, but Herzog is a TTMer, so something to keep in mind.
Unfortunately, Shane Dienst died a few years ago there, but who knows? I mean, hopefully Herzog will sign at least for anybody that's out there trying to collect that set signed. And error cards like that can always be fun, but they can also be kind of unpredictable too. I mean, sometimes you get a guy that's going to be like, no, that's not my photo. Or they'll say, yeah, it's my photo, but that's not my name. So either way, they might not sign it, but something to watch out for at least. That's kind of cool. Well, and the legal blotter here is the Shohei Ohtani and Ipe Mizuhara story continues to get a little bit deeper and weirder here. Of course, Mizuhara was his interpreter that was busted for taking several million dollars from him. And turns out part of that was used to purchase about 1,000 cards worth over $325,000. So big money being spent there on some collectibles as this now crosses over into this world. But the cards were all bought in early 2024. So very recently, like right before this whole thing came out, Yogi Berra, Juan Soto, and cards of Ohtani himself were among the cards that were in there. And Mizuhara was officially bank fraud this week. And sounds fortunately, though, I know there's a lot of concern early on that Ohtani might have been kind of fencing his own gambling debts or something through him. But no, it looks like that is not the case from what it looks like. There is honestly a case of straight up theft, but just another weird story that now says has tied its way into collectibles as well.
I hadn't followed this story. I know it's a big story, but the fact that it's kind of bleeding into our little corner of the sports worlds, I'm going to have to pay attention to this. It seems crazy.
Yeah,
for sure. The National. So we got the National adding. They add names every Wednesday to their upcoming roster for signing. So now they've put out more baseball names. Pedro Martinez is the biggest one. Hall of Famer, of course. Dodgers, Expos, Sox, Mets, Phillies. He's going to be there. So new names are coming out every Wednesday, as I guess I mentioned that. NSCCshow.com is where you can find all the info about the signers for the National.
We're giving you all the baseball stories was not intentional. This is just weird. Oh, that's all right. Lined up like that. Lastly, before we move into talking about some new releases here, we want to say a big congrats out to Bo Thompson. He's been on the show twice before, season one, episode 25, and season two, episode 27, back in September of 2019 and July of 2020, respectively. But Bo Thompson was the guy who was running 1 million Cubs. His goal was to get 1 million cards of Cubs players. And his project has finally come to fruition. He hit card number 1 million this past week. It was presented to him from Topps at Wrigley Field, where they did a custom one-of-one Super Fractor card of Bo himself. So really cool piece there to finish out with that. I was hoping to get him on for this week's show to talk to him in Collector's Corner, but unfortunately didn't hear back from him. We might see if we can get him on at some point here in the near future, though. So cool project, cool story. And congrats to Bo Thompson for finally finishing that one out.
Congrats.
Let's go ahead and take
Bo,
a look at some. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Just congrats to Bo. I remember I listened to one or two of his appearances, and it's an incredible project.
Yeah, absolutely is. Let's take a look at some new releases we've got coming up here. So got three to highlight here real quick as Topps Chrome Black Baseball is coming out in the next about 4 days from now. It'll be on April 17th. Kind of a middle high-end product here. You've got four cards per pack with one pack per box. In there, you're going to get two base cards, one refractor, and one encased auto in there. Presale price on that one, that's going to run you about $160.
So in the world of hockey, we have the Upper Deck Black Diamond coming out also on the 17th. And this is a high-end product. So six cards a pack, one pack per box. And so you'll find a one auto or diamond relic. You'll find exquisite collection, one of those. One base or base parallel, and then three insert tech or non-exquisite memorabilia cards. So you're getting some high-end stuff. I know I've not really got the wallet for this product, but I've seen some cool, I've seen the pictures and they put these cool diamonds in there. So there's some cool stuff there. Also, some autos I believe are in it, and a lot of diamond relic rookies is one. Part of the set, so it's focused a lot on the rookies and stars of the NHL.
Yeah. What's the price on that one?
Oh yeah, $500 for this pack of six cards.
Yeah, I'm with you there. A little higher than I'm used to spending, but I remember back in my day, Black Diamond was elevated, but not like super high. But this is back when they had like the 1, 2, 3, and 4 diamond parallels and all that. So kind of a fun break there to come across those.
Sure.
Upper Deck also coming out with the Connor Bedard collection. Same date, April 17th on that one. This one is all Bedard. For any of you Blackhawks fans, Bedard collectors, anybody else out there, it is a 26-card box set of, I'm guessing, highlights through Bedard's career so far. I don't know if it's just NHL, if it's going to go back further than that. I would think, considering their licensing, it's probably going to have pretty much his whole career in there, back to juniors and everything. But you're going to have some randomly inserted autographs in there. No guarantees per set or anything like that. Pre-sale price on that one is going to run $70. Let's move on to some show news here. We got three shows as well we're going to talk about real quick here. Paul, go ahead and take that first one there. Let's know what's going on there in Maryland.
Well, let's go out to just outside of Baltimore, Maryland. The Westminster show is happening April 20th. So 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Town Mall in Westminster. Admission is $5. They'll have 10 total autograph signers, including Roberto Alomar, Jose Canseco, and Justin Tucker, a couple of big hitters there. LuptonSports.com is where you can find info about that show.
Heading back to my old stomping ground, Strongsville show in Strongsville, Ohio. It's going to be April 19th through the 21st next weekend. Admission per day runs $8 to $12, depending on which day you go for. It's going to be held at the Brunswick Arena, I believe home of the, I believe that might be the Barons practice facility, if I remember right. Or not the Barons, I guess it'd be the Lake, the Cleveland Monsters. Now, I've changed names so many times, I haven't been back much since then. But yeah, Brunswick Arena is where that one's going to be at. And big one for autographs here. 20 signers there, including some Hall of Famers, Baseball Hall of Famer Tom Glavine, Football Hall of Famers Ozzie Newsome and Willie Rofe, and a whole lot of other former Cleveland players, mostly Browns and Indians there. StrongsvilleSports.com is going to be your site to check out more info on that.
So moving on to Long Island, the Long Island National, April 20th through the 21st at Hofstra University. Admission $15, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. This seems like a big show. 400 tables, 25 signers, including Tony La Russa, Trevor Hoffman, LT, Lawrence Taylor, and Denny Potvin, among others. That's nyshows.org with the details.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the big ones out there. So if you're around the New York area, go and check that out. And there were a whole lot of shows that I had to drop from here because I try to keep the Baker's Dozen to only 13 stories. So if you want to check out more shows coming up, go to cravetheauto.com. There's a whole list of stuff that's coming up there over the next few weeks. Right now, let's move it on to Collector's Corner.
And now it's time for Collector's Corner. Let's hear from our collector this week.
Well, this month in Collector's Corner, I talked to Andrew Lowe. Andrew and I have known each other for a few years, starting out through some Facebook groups. And then he said, hey, I'm moving down to Texas. What can you tell me about graphing some of the places here? And so we've met up several times out in Frisco and Cleburne. And we'll talk a little bit about his collection. So please enjoy my interview with Andrew Lowe. All right. Well, we're here in our Collector's Corner segment where we're joined by Andrew Lowe. Andrew, great to have you here on the show here for the first time.
Great to be here for the first time.
Yeah. So, Andrew and I are both members of a couple of Facebook groups. He's actually now is a local guy here in Texas, a little further south from where I'm at there. But I see him up in Cleburne and Frisco quite a bit there. But just tell us a little bit about, how'd you get started in being an autograph collector and everything? I mean, how far back do you go in getting into all of this?
So I first started collecting cards when I was about 5 or 6. I have 2 older brothers. They were leaving the house and they had all these random baseball cards. And like, we don't want to bring them with. Their wives wouldn't let them bring them with. So they gave them to me. And then I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. But I didn't know any of the players because they were so old. Because they were like 80s, 90s stuff. So then my dad got me my first like complete set for my birthday when I was 6. So then I just was collecting cards, like didn't do autographs, like would go to games or like get like a ball signed or whatever, but like wouldn't like pursue autographs too much. And then I think I was just perusing stuff one day on eBay and I saw that said like IP and TTM autographs on cards. I was like, wonder what that is. So then I found out what it was and started. My first game was actually in South Bend when Dylan Cease was his first time there. So yeah. I got Dylan C stuff, Eloy Jimenez right away. That was my first two like people that I had cards of that I was attempting to go get. So that was pretty cool. And now that's pretty much all I do in the summers is go to different games. I've been to 61 different minor league parks. So the goal is to see 120, but as they keep dwindling away, who knows how many I'll actually get to. But
is that just the affiliated ones or is that independent leagues as well?
That includes independent leagues too. Not college summer leagues, but just independent ball. Which I think is only like 2 or 3 of them. But
cool. How'd you get started in TTMing? Do you remember like who was the first request you sent out or anything or your first success or anything like that?
First request and first success was Bobby Doerr.
Nice.
Right. That was probably 2015. I got a bunch of, that's when I first started like mass collecting cards. Until then, I was just getting the complete set for my birthday every year, which I still do. 24, my birthday presents, a complete set from my parents. So in 2015, I started getting Topps update cards and they had a Bobby Doerr. I believe it was like a Hall of Fame, like remembrance card. I saw online that he signed through the mail. So I sent it out to him and like 9 days later, I got it back. I was like, hey, this is pretty cool. My dad, when I sent it out, looked at me, he's like, yeah, like you'll never see that again. 9 days later, it came back. So then I started sending other ones out. I think I got Clayton Kershaw pretty early when I was 15 or 16. And then COVID is when I really was going crazy with sending out TTMs was the 2020 Stars and Stripes. I started doing that. So I got all but like 7 or 8 signed through the mail. And then 2018, 2019 draft, I would do that winter. So like I'd sit down, write 200 requests, get most get I think 18 I got 60 back, and 19 I only got like 50 back. But then 2020 we killed it. We got almost 100 back because nobody had anything to do in the summer. So yeah. Everybody was signing stuff. I got Riley Fingers during COVID.
There you go.
I got Ryan Sandberg, Wade Boggs during COVID.
Boar's a really solid one to start with there. Cause I mean, I started like my first TTM, I was 7 years old and I didn't really do it seriously again until I hit my 20s there. But it took me forever to even think about even sending off to a Hall of Famer. All for me, it was just like, well, active players and that's it. If they're not with a team, well, I don't know what to do now. And so it's kind of cool that you kind of went the opposite there and you're like, okay, Hall of Famer, sure, why not?
Yeah, I was like, I just kind of looked it up, but like looked into it and saw that he like is 100% to sign. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. My 15-year-old self probably wouldn't have never sent on another one if it wouldn't have came back. Then I was like, oh, I came back. And then I started getting more into it and just kept sending. I probably sent out, I think, 700 or 800 in the last 4 or 5 years. So it's about 50, about 60% rate. But I kind of look into who I'm getting, who sends back before I send it out. Like this year when Aroldis Chapman started sending back, like I didn't even think about sending to him. So it's kind of, those are the disappointments. And you see guys that you want to send to, but you're like, there's no way they come back. And then all of a sudden they start, random people start getting them back.
It's fun with those ones too, especially, I mean, I think back to like I said, you know, I started doing this in the early 90s when I was like 7 years old. And back then it was like just after guys like Carl Hubble had died and all those who, Hubble was an incredible TTMer. And it's like, I look back and I'm like, man, if only I'd been 5 years older or something like that, or 10 years old, it could have gotten guys like him. And eventually people are going to do the same thing there with, you know, Bobby Doerr. So always a good one there. And I mean, Raleigh Fingers even right there too. It's another solid, solid sign that I still have not sent to yet. I got to change that here soon, I think. But yeah,
I got Jim Bunning a couple times right before he passed away too. He was always really good.
Yeah.
Trying to think who else I got. I got Billy Williams when he used to sign 4 or 5 years ago. That was right at the beginning. I actually got Craig Sager back the day that he passed away.
Oh, wow.
And then Daryl Hamilton I sent to, and he died the next day, so I didn't get that one back. But that seems like that's kind of happened a couple times to me, one way or the other. So
yeah. You've also been involved in baseball at a fairly high level, at least as an umpire as well, which a few years ago, I know back when Jeff Baker was still hosting the show, he actually had a AA Eastern League umpire on for an interview and everything. So you get to be our second umpire that we've talked to you on here. But how did you get into doing umpiring, and how tough is something like that to break into? Because, I mean, you, every baseball fan, of course, you know, likes to stand there and go, whatever, I could do that. And it's like, okay, yeah, let's see you try there, buddy. So how'd you get into that, and how has that been?
So I was a freshman in high school, and my dad was kind of like, hey, like, you kind of need to do something over the summer. Like, I was playing baseball, but like, at the same time, like, you're sitting there for all day. Like, you need to find some kind of job. And I was like, well, what kind of job is better than working in baseball all day? So I reached out to, like, my local Little League is where I started. I was doing, like, 10- and 11-year-old games as a 15- or 16-year-old freshman in high school. So I did those for a little bit, and then people were starting to see me do a little better. And a couple of the guys that I was working with, I was also playing like four. So like, I'd be playing like a night game and I'd be working with them in the morning. So like, it was a little kind of like, hey, like, you're seeing me play, like, you know, I'm doing well. So then they start giving me other opportunities. So I think my sophomore, junior year in high school, I started doing like 18, 19-year-old tournaments as I was 17. I would do the bases and these guys that are older than me. So I did that for all my summer, my junior and senior year of high school. That's how I made money to pay for going to baseball games and driving to games and getting tickets and stuff. So then when I went to college, then I started looking into high school umpiring and college summer league umpiring. So I played in the college summer league, and then Saturday nights we play games, and then Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings I go out and I'd umpire 5-6 games, usually 15, 16 games a weekend. So I'd make about $1,000 a weekend. That would pay for my whole week. And more. Nice. So, and then the last couple of years when I was a junior in college, I got offered to be in the Midwest Collegiate League, which is up in near Chicago. So I did some Chicago Summer League games, and I just happened to be up doing a game when one of the Frontier League guys went down the night before. So he was like, hey, like, we need a Frontier League guy to do a game. Like, can you just come fill in real quick? So I was like, okay. So I go up there. Of course, it's the Joliet Slammers playing the Tri-City Valley Cats at the time when Kuma Rocker was playing. So the three older guys, they're all in like their 50s or 60s, and they're looking at me and they're like, so you do the plate, right? And I'm like, yeah. And they go, well, you're doing the plate tonight. And I was like, oh, cool. And he's like, yeah, and Kuma Rocker's pitching. And I was like, Oh, and I knew who he was, so they kind of thought that they were going to catch me off guard. And I was like, well, he throws 100, and they're like, yeah, he does. So I was back there, the couldn't really see it too much. I had seen like 97, 98, but I'd never seen triple digits before from behind, from as an umpire. So I'm sitting back there, and the catcher looks at me. He's like, first time, huh? I was like, yeah, first time. He goes, well, I'll take care of it. He goes, if I move my glove, then it's not a strike. He's like, but I'm not going to move my glove much. That was one of the by far the best pitcher I've ever seen from behind as an umpire spot. Like, might have called five or six balls. He only pitched 3 innings, but that was pretty cool. Never did a Frontier League game again. They're like, I did good, but they're like, hey, like that you have to be 25 to do it, and I was only 21. So
Wow.
they're like, well, you're just kind of a sub. So I would do bases once, but I never would go back behind the plate. And now down here, I'm going to do some perfect game stuff out in Cleburne.
Nice.
So I'll be doing that still. In college, I played up as a D3 player for 4 years, so I kind of see that aspect. So like when I was 16 or 17, we played Coomer or not Coomer. We played Blaze Alexander, who's now making his major league debut. Played
Yes.
with him actually, and then played against Joe Adell, who's at the Angels. And then we saw Hunter Green when he was at Notre Dame Catholic High School out in Atlanta, and he was throwing 102. So that was a
Jeez.
little. Didn't get to see him in the box. I was in the bullpen, and our first hitter walks up, and he takes his 3 looks, doesn't even swing, comes back, and we're asking him, so what'd you see? He's like, I don't know. That's kind of how the people were against Coomer Rocker, so I kind of don't want to experience that from the batter's box, but.
Funny, you just mentioned three guys that I got all during spring training this year when I was out there. I'm like, hey, wait a minute, I know him. Oh yeah, hey, him too. All right. So yeah, it was kind of cool there, but trying to think, there was something I was about to ask about there too. Oh yeah, I was going to say the comment there about, so what'd you see up there? I don't know if you ever heard about when Ted Williams stepped in against Steve Dalkowski at all. Steve
No.
Dalkowski, legendary guy who could throw, they say he may have thrown over 110 and had like no
Right.
control at all.
Yep.
And just during batting practice one day before the Orioles and Red Sox are playing each other at a spring training game, Williams sees the guy throwing. He's like, all right, let's see what you got, and steps in the box. Dalkowski throws one pitch. Williams turns just pale white and walks out of the box. And somebody said, what was that? And he says, I don't know. With any luck, I'm never going to know again. Sounds about like what it was like there with Rocker thrown out there and Green as well there. So, wow,
Yeah,
that's.
our
Geez.
leadoff hitter that actually hit against Green that day last year was playing at Butler. Their opening series was against LSU with Paul Skenes on the
Oh,
mound.
wow.
He was batting leadoff again, and I texted him. I was like, before the game, I was like, hey, like don't face Skenes' fastest pitch of the year. And sure enough, the first pitch of the year was 103.2, which is the fastest he threw in the whole summer. So now he faced Hunter Green, who was throwing 101 that night, and then
Good
Paul Skenes
Lord.
threw him at 103. So,
I couldn't even get around on 60 in Little League. I can't imagine trying to hit 100 there. My God. That's wow. So you mentioned playing college. What position did you play? Were you a pitcher as well?
was a pitcher, so I would come out of the bullpen. I was mainly a setup man closer. I was a closer in high school as a setup man, eighth inning guy in college.
Nice.
Didn't really like starting because I would throw 5 or 6 innings. By the time I got to college, my arm was kind of done, so I just wanted to throw as hard as I could for an inning. The adrenaline's much different in the eighth when you got to make sure they don't score, or in the ninth inning you got to really make sure they don't score. So I kind of that aspect and the mental aspect was a lot more fun than just going out there throwing the first five and not really getting to see what happens at the end.
You mentioned some of the guys you've gotten before TTM and even a little bit of the in-person graphing there as well. What are some of your, do you have any particular projects at all that you work on? I know you mentioned, some of the draft sets and everything like that. Any other things, like any other specific teams you collect, any specific sets you're working on besides those, anything like that?
So my main collection is Cubs, anything Cubs. So unsigned, signed, relics, autographs, certified autographs, IP autographs, anything. And then within the Cubs, Brennan Davis, we met him pretty well through South Bend when I was out there. I lived in Indiana for 15 years, so I go to a couple South Bend games when he was out there. So I pretty much try to collect anything of him. I have all of his bobbleheads that he's gotten in different places. Got a couple batting gloves from him. And then Blaze Alexander is the next guy that I collect a lot. Played with him when we were 9, so kind of followed him all the way through. I think I have about 175 different Blaze cards,
Nice.
different parallels. I got his whole rainbow of his first Bowman of his 19 draft. And then set wise, like I collect a lot of team sets. So like if I get a team set, I try to finish it. I haven't really finished. I think the only one I finished is 2021 South Bend. But Frisco, last year's Frisco set, I'm within three, I believe, of getting done. And hopefully one of them I can get tomorrow out in Ricky DeVito out in Frisco tomorrow. So.
Oh, yeah. Which other guys are you missing from that Frisco set?
Josh
if
Sale.
You know.
Josh okay. Sale, who's out in wherever he is now. He's released. I think he lives down in Southern Texas. Okay. But he won't respond on Instagram. We sent him a couple of us have sent out TTMs to him. Hasn't come back. And Tekoa Roby was hurt all year last year. But now mm-hmm. he's with Springfield. So hopefully when he comes through, I'll be able to get him.
He's a solid one per signer, at least. So you'll definitely get him
yeah,
on the set.
So at least that's the only card that I'll put him out. So at least I'll get that one done. Yeah. And then I'm sure DeVito shouldn't be a problem tomorrow. So I'll be down to one after Roby and DeVito. Not sure how we're going to get Sale. But
yeah. There's a lot of people wondering that too. I bought, I think, eight cards of him right before, right at the start of the season last year. I'm thinking, all right, I'll get the, and actually, I may have been gone. I think I bought them even earlier in the season because I was going to see him originally in Frisco and then Round Rock. And, well, I thought I was going to see him in Frisco. He got sent to Round Rock. And when I went to Round Rock for some reason, he wasn't there. I'm like, well, that's pleasant. I'll just hang on to these for a while. And then I'm like, all right, I'll finally get these done in Frisco. And then he gets released. So I'm like, but I think there's several graphers around here in the same boat as you on that one.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that all they needed, they got Roby and DeVito already, so all they yeah. need is Sale. And I'm like, oh, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
But that's the hardest part. Like, now it wouldn't have mattered if I had, like, 15 of them left. But now that when you're mm-hmm. down to one or two, it's like, okay, like, you got to figure out a way to get him.
Right, right. Well, DeVito was cool, at least, so I'm sure you'll be able to get him without much of a problem or anything.
Yeah,
there,
I don't think, hopefully that won't be too much of a problem. I have one for me and one for a buddy, so I think the two cards should get done with no problem, hopefully, so.
Yeah. So you've bounced around a little bit. We just mentioned, you know, Indiana, that you were there for, however many years it was, now down to Texas there. What brought you down here? I know you're just, you know, tell us a little bit about what you're doing down here, basically, because it's sports related as well.
Yep. So I grew up in Indiana about an hour and a half from South Bend. And when Kane County was a team, about an hour and a half from there. When I was 18, I moved to Ohio to go to school out there in D3 school. So I do Toledo, Fort Wayne, Columbus, Dayton. They were all about an hour and a half away. And then I made the grueling decision after 4 years of undergrad school to go to graduate school, to go to Queens, New York. Lasted for a year out there. There's tons of different games out there, so that was a lot of fun. But I went to grad school to be a sports information director, so it's like a media relations person. They do like social media stats, recaps, writing stuff. Mainly dealt with volleyball, softball, men's basketball out there. And then when Rick Pitino came, he was kind of like, okay, like we don't really need you anymore. So then I found a new job, went to Charlton State down in Stephenville, Texas, where I am now. Been there for a year. Enjoyed a year of men's basketball down here. We actually had a pretty good season, so it was a lot more fun to be true. We traveled all over the country, played at the University of Tennessee, played at the University of Virginia, played in the CIT tournament, got to host that, like the third postseason tournament for the NCAA tournament. So that was pretty cool. Won 25 games. So the guys were nice. Like, it's just a fun overall experience. I'd take photos for them, run their social media account, write like previews and recaps, do game notes so like that the announcers knew what they were talking about to talk about our guys, because you go to Tennessee, not too many people even know where Stephenville, Texas is, no less about the 15 guys that are going to be on the floor. So
yep.
It's a lot of fun. I like doing that kind of stuff. Tried to get into sports, and this was my way to get into it. So realized my junior year of college, I probably wasn't going to be a professional baseball player. So yep. I figured I need to think out something else to do. So figured this was about the closest I could get to. I'm basically living like a Division I athlete. They put me up in hotels. They feed me five times a day out in the road. So I get all the gear just like the D1 basketball player does. So it's a pretty good life out here. So
how many sports do you guys have there besides, I know obviously you mentioned basketball being the big one. Is that the only one you're involved with, or do you do several of them? Do you do all of them for that matter?
So I do men's basketball, women's soccer, and women's golf primarily. And then I'll help with everybody. It's kind of like an all hands on deck for football. That's our big sport down here. Obviously Texas, you got to have football. So we have 15,000-20,000 fans come out to, or in the FCS level. So we're not in the Bulls subdivision yet, but still get some decent action out here. So it's usually 15,000-20,000 fans. You got a pregame tailgate. You got fireworks after the ends of games. So giveaways. So like it draws a decent amount. And then we have about 15 other sports. I think we have 18 sports in total, men's and women's. Just added women's soccer last year, and then this year we just added women's beach volleyball. So they're kind of starting to grow, and I believe that they're starting to talk about a men's soccer team or a wrestling team. So they're trying to kind of balance back out since we added two women's sports, kind of men to add another men's sport. It's kind of how the college landscape is now. If you add a women's sport, you got to add a women's sport, and vice versa. So there's four of us on staff that'll do all 18 sports from our social media, media relations part. And then we have a marketing team, a videography team, and then like an ESPN Plus team, because all of our games are on ESPN Plus. So they'll have a guy that broadcasts all those. And so we don't have to do with that. So that works pretty well.
I'd say if you need an extra broadcast at any point, let me know. But I think my wife might stab me if I got back into radio again. So,
yeah, we actually had Bobby Bell do one of our games. He's the WFAN. So he came out, and Bobby Bell and RJ Choppy did one of our games too. So our broadcaster is pretty good friends with them. A little different getting from a disc jockey compared to doing a play by play for a Division I college basketball game. But it was definitely interesting. So,
yeah. Cool. Tell us about some of your favorite pieces that you've gotten over the years. I know you mentioned that you've got, you know, do a lot with the team sets and everything there, but I see a lot of what look like some mini helmets that are behind you. So I'm definitely curious about that. Just any other pieces that you want to talk about there as well.
I got a lot of mini helmets over here. This is actually my most recent one is Joey Loperfido. He's the incoming prospect for the Astros. Got him last week in, where did we get him? Round Rock. Got him in Round Rock, Sugar Land. And then, so my fiance, after all the games, will go and find different kinds of wherever we go. We try to go to a bunch of different ones, like I said before. So we'll pick up, like, these are some Memphis ones that we picked up. So whenever we see a Memphis guy, like, we'll go and try to get them. But I have probably over 100 different helmets. All the South Bend ones, I've tried to get every South Bend player that's a top 30 prospect on them. So I have about 50 of those up there. But most of the helmets that I get done are usually like top 30 prospects that don't have cards, or guys that I'm out of cards of. So at least I can say it. Like Joey Loperfido, like I didn't have any cards.
Right.
So I was like, well, I might as well, at least I can get him on something. And then probably my new favorite piece, yeah, I'll bring this one down, is my last year when I was up in Brooklyn, I was able to get Jackson Holliday. So, and he signed a uncracked bat, put number one on there. So that was pretty cool. He was nice guy, signed 8 cards for me in 2 days, had no problems at all. As long as you said please and thank you, he didn't really care. He was a nice kid. So that was probably one of my best experiences last year. Evan Carter, got him last year at Frisco. Yep. That was a really cool one. Jackson Churio, I got on mini helmets before he had cards, so I didn't get any cards. Believe he'll probably be the I guess he's still in the majors, so I guess he won't be the number one prospect.
Yeah.
But Gunnar Henderson, I haven't gotten. But I got Jordan Westberg was a cool one. I liked him a lot. So that was probably one of my favorites. Last year, I got Ricky Tiedemann. That was another good one. He's an up left-handed pitcher with the Blue Jays. Believe he was in the top 10, but I don't think he's in the top 10 anymore. But most of those kind of guys, I usually get the guys going up. I don't usually get MLB stars too often. So I'll just stick in the minor league games. But like tomorrow, Nathaniel Lowe will be down there. So that'll be a cool one to get on a rehab. Got Michael Lorenzen last week, so that was pretty cool.
Nice.
When I was in college, I go to a bunch of Reds Fests, so which in my opinion is the best postseason convention that there is. I would get about 700 or 800 cards signed in 3 or 4 days. Never got Lorenzen, so it was pretty cool to get Lorenzen for the first time.
I have heard that about Reds Fest. The Reds, the Cubs, and the Braves, it seems they're the three biggest I always hear as always having great ones, which I mean that's great for those cities, but it's like sitting here in Texas, the Rangers used to have such a great one, and it is the complete opposite of great now at this point, unfortunately. And even before they won the World Series, it was starting to go downhill. I don't know what happened there, but it's good to at least see that a few teams are still taking that seriously and giving fans a good time there.
Right. The Reds loved fans. Like they didn't, I've heard like when I moved down to Texas, I was like, can we go to Reds Fest or a Rangers Fest kind of thing? And everybody's like, no, like don't go there. Reds Fest, everybody's telling you got to go because there's 5 or 6 lines going at the same time that take about 250 people. So there's like 1,300 people, and there's not that many that are strictly running around trying to get autographs. So you can get through the lines pretty quickly, and you're getting decent guys. You're getting Nick Senzel. You're getting Jonathan India. When Aristides Aquino was big, I got him. Like, that was pretty cool. They didn't really hide people. Like, they put Joey Votto out there. They put Tucker Barnhart out there, Eugenio Suarez. Like, they're putting all their top guys out there and kind of, like, thanking their fans for the whole year. And it was only $25 for a 2-day ticket. So like it was pretty affordable for everybody.
Yeah.
And it was 7 or 8 hours long. So like it was definitely their kind of like thank you coming back. And it's good to see the teams like that still do it.
I remember back when the Rangers used to have good events like that. You could go up there and you could get the major league guys. They'd have the biggest ones. You'd have to win like a lottery to get into. But some of the smaller guys and some of the prospects, you could, you know, get in line and hope for the best there. But if you really just wanted to go out there and completely rack, they would have a bunch of alumni guys. All the retired players would be down like in the basement there next to the near the locker rooms. And the first year I went, they had two different tables set up and they would have two players at each of the two tables. So if you're first in line, you can get into that first one, run over to the second one, run back over that first one just as the next group starts up, just keep on bouncing back and forth between the two all day. And I'd get out of there with 100 cards signed with no problem with just, you know, running around back and forth down there. But they haven't had the alumni guys now in years. They got rid of alumni weekend here. And I don't know, it's just sad to see, because I mean, the Rangers, if you were to take a casual baseball fan and ask them to name all 30 teams until this year, how many of them would forget the Rangers?
Agreed. So, yeah. But going to Globe Life, like, that's pretty cool. That was our first time coming down here. My fiance and I went last June. I actually got Wander Franco when he was with the Rays were here. So that was a tough place for autographs, but Wander and Randy Rosarena took their time to sign for as many people as they could. So that was pretty cool. But having the Futures game and the All-Star game here is definitely going to be an interesting to see how they kind of treat their fans. Like, Seattle had hundreds of different autograph signings and opportunities for even the current All-Stars to meet the fans. So I'm kind of interested to see how the Rangers are going to do that for fans, for current players, and what kind of alumni they bring back.
I'll be hopeful about that. Are you planning on going down to the I remember it used to be Fan Fest, they would call it. I don't remember what it is now, like the Ballpark Village or whatever it was.
Something like that called. So yeah. Definitely going to go. Probably definitely want to go to the Futures game. Probably going to go like to the Village, like on the Home Run Derby. Probably won't be able to afford to go into the Home Run Derby or the All-Star game in Globe Life, but hopefully do some outside stuff that whole weekend. That'd be pretty fun.
Well, I'll definitely see you around there. I'm hoping to get tickets. If they need tickets for the Village, I'm hoping to do that for every single day of it at least. And
yeah, for sure. I think that'll definitely be the best part of it, especially because hopefully they won't be that expensive, that you can still just kind of go and have fun in the Village and see people in the draft. Will be fun, I'm sure. I kind of like doing that. So I'm sure you'll get some random scouts or managers or that are coming in for the draft kind of thing. So.
And for any music fans out there, I know the Baseball Project is playing a concert over in Fort Worth as well. So songs by former members of REM about baseball. We actually had one of their members on back again about a year ago or so when Jeff interviewed them. So hoping to go out and see that show too. I'm a big REM fan. And I mean, it's music about baseball. How much better can you possibly get, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
So cool. Any other thoughts at all here before? Anything else you want to say or mention about your collection, about baseball, anything like that at all?
So we were talking before about some of the best experiences. You mentioned the worst experiences. We actually had a couple of years ago ran into Blaine Enloe with the Cedar Rapids Colonels. Mm-hmm. And he comes out and there's two of us standing out there. It's like 25 degrees. It's Midwest wind. He walks out and we each had a card for him. And he looks at us and he goes, "Didn't I sign for you inside?" We're like, "No, you told us no." And he's like, "Well, I'm telling you no again." And he got on the bus.
Oh my God.
I believe about 5 minutes later, Royce Lewis comes out and he's the nicest guy ever. We had two cards showing for him. He's like, "You got more, don't you?" And we're like, "Yeah." And he pulls out, he bid about 10 for each of us. And then he looks at us. And as we were flipping through, finding the rest of them, he said, "Why isn't your Blaine Enloe signed?" He's like, "He just came on just before me." I was like, "No, he told us no." And he's like, "Okay." So he takes my book, goes up in there, comes back down. My Blaine Enloe card is now signed. Plus there's four or five other guys that I missed that are all signed. And he looks at me and he told Blaine, he's like, he goes, "I told Blaine that he's got a sign for fans," and he goes, "and if I can do it, he can do it." So that was a bad experience for Blaine, but a cool experience for Royce that I thought was pretty cool to share. So
that is great. It's always good to see that. I mean, Royce Lewis, if you're a number one overall pick and you have time to sign for somebody, there's nobody who has an excuse not to do it. So it's really good to see that he does that. I mean, he's still a TTMer even occasionally now, so it's always great.
Right, for sure. He's always been nice to everybody, and it just wish that some guys would following his suit and not be as mean as some of them are. I mean, if you don't want to sign for guys like us, that's fine, but at least sign for the little kids that are coming.
Yes.
Like they have no clue who they are. Like they're handing you a program or they're handing them a hat or just something random. Like you have 2 seconds to sign a hat for a little kid, because all he's going to do is he's going to run back and tell mommy and daddy how cool it was. He's not going to tell them who it was. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know who you are. Like That's to me what bugs me, that like we had out in Winston-Salem, there was two of us that went out there and there was a little kid. It was just some random guy that was walking out and he goes, "Can you sign my ball?" And he's like, "No, I can't sign balls." And the kid started crying and the dad walks over and he's like, "You do realize you're one step away from working at McDonald's." And the guy looked at him and he's like, "You know, you're kind of right." So he goes back to the kid and he's like, "I'll sign your ball." And the dad's like, "No, we don't need your autograph. You can just go work at McDonald's."
Wow.
And then I believe it was literally the next day that he got released. So it was kind of that was kind of a fun moment. I don't even remember who the guy was. It was just some guy that they literally called up from like the Dominican League for like a week series and then just were gonna get rid of him.
Life comes at you fast there, buddy. Karma works works very quickly sometimes.
Definitely. Jeez.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us here on the show, Andrew. I'm sure I'll be seeing you in Frisco here pretty soon, if not there, then Cleburne, all around the area here. And
yep.
I got to try to get down to Round Rock, too. I've only been to one game there yet, and, I mean, I had great luck down there. So I'll have to find out when if there's any time I can get down there when you're also going to be there and go and graph the Express there.
Yeah, they're a fun team to do. This year they're a little tough because they're all been there for the last couple of years, so they're kind of tired of signing. But the visiting teams are definitely fun to get, and the giveaways are usually pretty good down there. I knew they're doing a lot of Rangers giveaways this year. So that World Series trophy that everybody was very excited about up in Globe Life yesterday, they're actually giving away, I believe, the same one down in Round Rock. So,
oh, wow.
So I feel like they're kind of like the Evan Carter bobblehead they gave away this week, too, at Rangers Stadium is also being given away at Frisco. So the Rangers definitely do giveaways pretty well. So Round Rock and Frisco are the two pretty good places to get giveaways.
I'll give them credit for that. They do at least do a lot of bobbleheads and such here. I mean, even their bat giveaway here was not full size bats, but they were pretty damn good, I gotta say.
Yeah. We kind of expected. My fiance and I walked in, we're like, oh, we're getting like little mini bats, and we got like a 25-inch like decent barrel bat, and we're like, oh, that's a little different than what we thought we were gonna get. So
yeah. Cool. Well, there you go. That is Collector's Corner here with Andrew Lowe. Thanks for joining us here once again, and we'll head on back to the show. Once again, a big thanks to Andrew joining us here in Collector's Corner. Let's move on now to Making the Grade.
Making the Grade is sponsored by CGC Cards. All card grading, all in one place. Certified guarantee company, CGC. Devoted to the expert grading of collectible cards. Visit cgccards.com today.
Making the Grade is just a quick summary of all things going on in the grading world, bringing you the news of who's up, who's down in whether it's the companies themselves, whether it's the players themselves. And Paul, let's take this one here. We've got numbers from the first week of April from the big four grading companies.
So let's start with PSA. 294,900 cards graded. That's a percent of, it's down 13%. Meanwhile, we got SGC with 38,000 cards. They're up 8%. CGC stayed put, no change here, 37,000 cards from CGC. And then finally, we have Beckett, so 12,200, so 12,200 cards, and that's also down 23%. So a couple of big ones have been down, total of like 382,000 cards graded.
Yeah, I mean, keeping it busy there. Not quite the, we didn't have last week's numbers at all, but we did have the month of March at least there. But yeah, a little up and down movement there. Kind of typical, it seems like, here lately, but always fun to see how the big four graders are doing things. So right now, let's take a look at the big three.
This week's big three is brought to you by Gemrate.com. Whose cards are hot and whose cards are cold this week? Let's find out from our friends at Gemrate.com.
This week for the big three, I'm joined by Ryan Stuzinski of Gemrate.com. Let's hear what he has to say. All right, well, we're into the big three right now, and we've got a special guest on for this month's one. Ryan Stuzinski of Gemrate is actually joining us here this week to read off the big three. Ryan, good to have you on the show. First time you've been on since I've taken it over here, and yeah, just great to have you on here.
Thanks, Drew. Appreciate you having me on. Nice to finally connect after all this time.
Definitely, definitely. So how are things going, first off, up there at Gemrate and everything?
Things are good. Yeah, things have been really busy. We've been starting to push out some new features. We have a universal pop report data that we've been publishing so that you can now see, you know, for certain sets, the grading data across all graders and just one sort of pop report, which has been really exciting for us to start to bring to market. So, you know, we've got some old vintage sets on there. We've got some ultra modern sets on there. And then we also launched universal search, which is basically just like a way to quickly learn the pop of a single card. So instead of doing it for a set, you could do it with any card that's in our catalog or any of the grading catalogs and see it across all the data. So anyways, it's been good, been very busy getting that out. And yeah, we're sort of just working behind the scenes to keep improving the catalog.
Great. I mean, I'm not a big grading person at all, but I'm a big stats person. So anytime I see numbers like this, I totally geek out every week. So really cool to check all that out. But so yeah, we just, my co-host for this week, Paul, and I just went over some of the numbers here from the week. So we've got you here for the TTM Cast exclusive, though, the big three. What are our big three players here for this week?
Yeah, it's interesting. It wasn't such a blowout week because I was looking at the data just before this, and last week I didn't realize it was pretty much a record high for 2 weeks ago, I should say. So this week was down off of that record high. So there's not that many players that were sort of, seeing growth coming off of those extreme highs. And so this week, the top three were Drew Jones was actually at the top of the list, which is interesting because he's not really been as high profile of late. I was sort of surprised to see that, but he was up 20% versus last week. Ellie was up 13%, and Corey Seager. So three baseball players, but all different sort of, well, Drew and Ellie are sort of in the same boat, where Corey Seager was interesting because he's obviously done well of late, but is not really high profile in a lot of ways. So it was interesting to see him at the top of this list. So three baseball players at the top of the list. And then on the other side of it, this list was interesting as well, but for different reasons. It's kind of quite the mix of players. So the three players with the biggest declines, Shohei down 25%. So his new cycle clearly affected him in some way. I mean, the thing with this grading data, I've always heard you guys allude to it, and it's the truth, is basically there's a lot of reasons behind it. It's never as sort of real time as sort of I want to believe it is. You know, this is the people, you know, the stuff that's feeding through the grading companies now could be, related to things from months ago, but sometimes it does sort of have an impact. So this, you know, him being in the news might have had an impact there. LaMelo was the number two. LaMelo Ball was number two, down 25% as well. He's just kind of been out of the spotlight now, and sort of I think the shine's come off his profile. And then Rashee Rice was down 37%, which is, you know, interesting because that's the biggest set that's been graded over the last 6 weeks has really been 2023 Prism. And so I think people probably just started to pump the brakes on some Rashee Rice stuff that was coming out of there. But he's definitely down a lot, given that he's been in the news cycle as well for some, you know, driving controversy.
Right. Yeah, it's been making big news here around the Dallas area, that's for sure.
Yes, of course.
Speaking of Dallas area, it's funny because you mentioned Corey Seager there as one of the big, the top three risers there this week. And not a high profile player, which is so weird to say. I mean, it's true, but it's so weird to say that about a guy who is a World Series MVP in both leagues. It's like,
right,
you'd think that's, you know, this guy that everybody's going to pay attention to, and they really don't that much. It's weird.
No, it's crazy. I was somebody that was collecting a lot of Lindor, who was kind of, when I talked to people, Seager would get a lot of the sort of same discussion, but Seager was like hurt at the time. But it's just interesting. He's so accomplished now at this stage to do what you just said he's done. And yet, you know, he sort of flies under the radar, and, you know, it's somewhat unfortunate, but at the same time, it could be opportunity in that, you know, he's building up a nice career here. And so interesting to see, but yeah, I'm always pleasantly surprised. You know, I'm never surprised when I see sort of the prospects sort of emerging because people are quick to grade those things. But when somebody sort of just who hasn't been in the, you know, nearly the spotlight starts to emerge, it's nice to see. So I like seeing Corey Seager there this week.
Definitely, definitely. Well, before we let you go, Ryan, any other thoughts here before we move on to the next portion here?
No, thanks again for having me on. Appreciate being able to jump in, just weigh in on the data real quick. Thanks for letting me sort of just, you know, participate and sort of window some of what I'm seeing and, you know, give people some insight into what's happening on the grading side. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Great. And real quick, also, where can everybody find you online, follow you, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So on Instagram, it's at GemRate, X/Twitter, it's at GemRate. And then the thing that I would say is best to sort of get some stuff that we don't really promote nearly as much, but some good data behind the scenes, is also our email. So if you go to GemRate.com, you'll get a pop-up for our email. And I would suggest, if you're interested in more data and stats, to give that a look as well.
Great. Ryan Suzinski, thanks for joining us here once again on The Big Three. So once again, a big thanks to Ryan for providing The Big Three and to GemRate.com for providing these exclusive numbers to TTM Cast. Time to move on. Let's take a look at Stamp of Approval.
I bet you're wondering, who earned this week's TTM Cast Stamp of Approval?
The TTM Cast Stamp of Approval, just a moment for us to give our thumbs up to something, anything. It could be anywhere in life. Sometimes it's food, sometimes a TV show, movies, music. It could be sports related, it could not. It's all over the place. It kind of gives a chance to show that we're not just a bunch of sports geeks, basically, even though, I mean, half the time mine end up is still sports related anyways. But my stamp approval this week, I've got some food here to talk about this time. It is Jimmy's Burgers over in Grand Prairie, Texas. Texas has some pretty darn good burgers, I got to say. I mean, they do meat very well in this state of all kinds, and you find a lot of good burger places around here, but Jimmy's Burgers this week, I always forget how good they are until I order them, and My wife and I got them last night. They had this great habanero burger, and a lot of people know I'm kind of a sucker for all things spicy, and this, the great thing with this is that somehow the habaneros are not like, you know, blow your face off hot at all, but they maintain enough of the heat, great amount of the flavor there. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's probably the best of the spicy burgers I've had right around this area. So if you happen to be in the Dallas area at any time, Jimmy's Burgers in Grand Prairie, Texas, they are my TTM cast stamp of approval for this week. Paul, what do you got?
Dude, now I need a burger. Yeah, exactly. Just hearing this, like, that sounds amazing. So my stamp of approval is actually is sports related a little bit. It's a shout out to my friend John. So John Barr is the creator of NHL to Seattle. So he was the sort of one of the driving forces in the kind of throughout the years of helping rally fans in Seattle who wanted the NHL here. And you know, since, and then we, you know, we accomplished that, I guess, right? It's pretty crazy. You know, he's, I still see him at games and everything. And I got a message from him earlier this week saying, would you like to attend the Sharks morning skate? So Sharks are playing up here in Seattle. And they played on Thursday. And so normally these away team morning skates are closed to the public. And I don't really ever think that you could go, but apparently he got an invite and had a, you know, he's like, yeah, you're the first person I thought of up here for, you know, if you want to see the Sharks. So I really appreciate him sort of kind of looping me in, and I got to go and just hang out. It was an optional skate, kind of a meaningless late season game between two teams who aren't making the playoffs. But I got to go and, you know, hang out with a few other Sharks fans. And then Drew Remenda, legendary broadcaster for the Sharks. He's been there since almost day one. I mean, he came over and kind of talked with us and got to really, it was cool. We got to chat with him, and he shared some incredible stories. Like hockey, people in the hockey world can tell stories like you wouldn't believe. And they're all, you know, they're all very colorful. They're fun. And he told stories about the early days of the Sharks, that 94 Cup run. And he was at the time a video coach for them. And so he told some Kevin Constantine and Sergei Makarov stories, and, we had some fun talking about that. So that was just an incredible sort of little experience this week. So yeah, thanks again to John for that.
Broadcasts are always the best one. I mean, I'm biased, I will say it, but broadcasts are always the best ones to talk to, because I mean, we remember everything as much as we can, and we are perfectly willing to sit there and echo it, you know, 5,000 times over. I know Daryl Ray with the Stars, he and I have traded minor league, junior league bus riding stories quite a few times there whenever I've met him. So it's always fun to get to talk to guys like that that have been at it for so long like that. Yeah. Well, there you go. A great stamp of approval there. And so with that, I think we'll move on into the Vern Rap Minute. Vern Rap Minute is dedicated to the memory of Mr. Vern Rap, former major league manager and player who our show's co-founder, our show's founder, Jeff Baker, had mailed to him and didn't know that he had already passed away. So we provide this as a service to collectors out there so you don't make the mistakes that we have had. And we'll let you know who's passed on in the world of anybody that might TTM here in the previous week. And well, the big one to lead things off, O.J. Simpson. That news just cut like a knife right there hearing that. But former running back, of course, for the Buffalo Bills, the San Francisco 49ers from 1969 to 79. First player to rush for over 2,000 yards in a season in the NFL. He was a 1968 Heisman Trophy winner, and not going to make any jokes about his post-career legal issues that all everyone knows. You know, the going on trial for homicide, spending some time in prison for, I believe, theft, if I remember right, or something like armed robbery, I think is what it turned out to be. So, yeah, I'm not going to make any jokes. If everybody wants to take a stab at it next week, go ahead. But I think now's the time to not just, well, we're not going to touch that one. OJ was a rare TTMer. I saw a few from him every now and then.
He was 76 years old.
All right, so in the world of baseball, we lost Jerry Grody, catcher for the Miracle Mets and a two-time All-Star. He was in the league from 1963 to 81 on the Astros, Mets, Dodgers, and Royals. He was an excellent TTMer, and he was 81 years old.
Also lost Fritz Peterson this week. Peterson was a pitcher for about 10 years or so from 1966 to 76. Member mostly of the Yankees, also played for the Indians. Finished his career up with about four games with the Texas Rangers there in 76. He was an All-Star in 1970, so had a couple good years in there, but most famous or infamous either way for his infamous trade with Mike Kekich, where as all sorts of players were getting traded, they decided, hey, we're going to trade wives. Kekich just decided he's kind of stayed out of the spotlight ever since then a bit. But Peterson, he was still well-known after that. He has actually an excellent TTMer throughout much of his life. He got traded from the Yankees to the Indians in the infamous Chris Chambliss trade that did not work out well for Cleveland at all. But like I said, Peterson, excellent TTMer through 2020. He was 82 years old.
All right, so we have in football, Eric Sievers. He passed away. He was a tight end for the Chargers, Rams, and Patriots. He played from in the 80s, 1981 to 90, 122 games, 16 touchdowns. He was a rare TTMer, and he was 66 years old.
Back in baseball again, we lost Bobby Payne this week. She was an infielder and pitcher in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League from 1949 to 1951. She's the league's only native of Louisiana. She played for, I believe, four teams in the league while she was there. But her biggest contribution to this came well after the league was over and had largely been forgotten until about the 1980s or so, and she and several former players were heavily involved in getting the league recognized by the Hall of Fame. They got a couple of exhibits put in the Hall of Fame about them. And of course, the movie A League of Their Own, which was based on that, was she was, I believe, involved in the writing and creation of that as well. Payne was an excellent TTMer through 2018. She was 91 years old.
Finally, the world of entertainment, we lost Joe Flaherty. He was an actor and comedian. He was on the cast of Second City TV, SCTV. I was a pretty big fan of him. He was the dad on Freaks and Geeks, which is one of the most underrated, I think, comedies of its time. Pretty awesome stuff. A great show. He was most notably the heckler in Happy Gilmore. That was one of the funniest parts of that whole movie. He appeared in a lot of other stuff, a lot of other TV and movie sort of cameos, character roles. He was not a TTMer, and he was 82 years old.
I had like just a quick drop of his jackass from Happy Gilmore to drop in right there, but yeah. So there you go. Unfortunately, sad to lose all of those this week. And if you lost anyone this week, our thoughts are with you. Let's move on now to our TTM returns.
Was our mailbox full this week? Let's take a look at this week's TTM returns.
Well, it's the main reason why we're here, why the show exists. We have our TTM returns for this week. It's been a fairly light week for me as I was planning originally to do some in-person stuff. And I'm thinking, all right, I'll at least have something to talk about there. And now, no, that's not happening. But I did at least get two in, got a third one that's going to be coming in today, and hopefully I'll be writing some more here. But first one I got in, Jose Cruz Jr., former outfielder for mostly the Blue Jays, but played for a couple other teams there as well. He is now one of the coaches down at Rice University in Houston. So I mailed down to him and got those back after about, I think it was a two-month wait or so on getting those back. So very happy to add those in. And I got a Dave Poulin as well, former member of the Flyers, the Bruins. I think just the Flyers and Bruins. May have played for a couple others in there, but those two notably, most notably. He's working with CBC up in Canada now, so I mailed off there and took about a year turnaround. I think it was May of last year I sent those out, maybe June, but 9-10 months or so came back to me, though, and he also wrote a short note back saying, hey, good luck with your collection. So always cool to get stuff like that in. And coming in today, it looks like I've got Ken Klee headed this way. He's one of the coaches in the Women's League right now. He was actually doing studio stuff with the Colorado Avalanche earlier this year before getting called in to coach a team in Minneapolis-St. Paul there, I believe. So hopefully I have those coming in, as it looks like I do on informed delivery. And so
There you go. That's what I've got, Paul. I see you've got a couple of them that came in as well.
Yeah. I've been sort of also in sort of a TTM lull. I haven't really written anything, hadn't really had time. I do have like a box near my desk that's like my queue of guys I want to send to. I looked up and they're signing. And I think with the offseason coming up, I might kind of take a look at that a little bit. I did have a couple that came in over the past week that had been out for like 4 months. So, you know, wasn't expecting to get them back at that point, you know, to have two of those sort of come back within a week is kind of fun. The first one, Joe Sorella from the Calgary Wranglers. I think you get him back recently.
I did. Yeah. Mine took a little bit longer than that, 4 months, but yeah, I did get him recently too.
Yeah. So he's the Calgary AHL team, the Wranglers. He was previously with the Stockton Heat, before they moved to Calgary. And, yeah, 4 out of 4, he signed a couple cards, a few cards from sets I've been sort of passively collecting. So 91 Opeachy, 93 Score, or two that I work on. And then I had him do a Devils card. So 86, I think, tops. And then another, like a Florida expansion card. So his career is interesting. He played, his first season was the Colorado Rockies, 1981 to 82, like the last season they were there. And then followed the team to New Jersey. And then he ended his career. One of the last teams he played for was the Panthers. So he ended with one of the expansion teams. Kind of interesting.
I'm going to ask real quick here, since you mentioned the 91 Score there. Are you doing the American version with the purple borders or the Canadian with the blue and the red borders?
Oh, I was doing 93.
Okay, never mind that. For some reason, I was thinking 91 there. So, okay.
Yeah, I also collect 91 Opeachy.
There you go. I think I combine those two. So.
Yeah. The next year, my other return, Chris Terreri, longtime, you know, Devils backup goalie from the 90s. I got him back 5 of 5. It was a little bit more than I like to send usually, but I saw his response rate and sort of figured it'd be okay to do it once. I got these again, 91 Opeachy, 92 Fleer Ultra, and then 93 Score. I do both series, but usually the series one is the one I grew up collecting at least. And then 95 Score is my other favorite set, because 95, 96 Score, it's a small set, but there's so much white space on that design that it looks incredible signed. Like, and that's a set that I used to, you know, as a kid, I would, you know, rollerblade down to the card shop and like open packs of, so it's some fun memories, you know. And, I think the final card I got from Chris there was a 96, 97 Score when he was on the Sharks, and it's the Golden Blades parallel, which is sort of a matte finish. And, the card just came out looking amazing. So, huge thanks to both of them for signing this week.
Are you a typer or a handwriter when it comes to sending out your letters?
I kind of, it depends. I think with the older players, I like to handwrite it. I think they're more used to handwriting. Even though it does take longer, I still have a template in my head of sort of what I, sort of the structure of it, what I do, but I do like to write it. With the younger players, when I do send to them, I don't think they care as much. And so I try to, but even with the typewritten ones, I don't just do a form letter type thing. Like, I'd like to make it obvious that, you know, I put some time into my request. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, it's definitely the best way to go, I think, there. I know I've talked about this a couple times with Troy there. He's definitely a typer all the time. I've started converting over to typing now just because it's easier. Because, I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is I sit there and I'm like, I've got 25 to send out and I do not want to, you know, put my wrist through all that. So I've started typing a bit more and goes a little bit faster. And I haven't noticed a change yet in terms of success rate either way. So I'm definitely liking the convenience a bit more. That's for sure.
I just got a new printer recently that works better. So I might actually use that, because that was the other problem, was my printer wasn't very good. And
oh yeah.
So now I can kind of maybe type more.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I think that about does it for the show here this week. Paul, any other thoughts before we go ahead and sign off for today?
I mean, it just, it's great to be on here, and thanks for having me. And I'm hoping that get some TTMs in and, you know, before we know it, at least for hockey fans, it'll be training camp. So I'm looking forward to that already, even though the season, at least for me, is already over for NHL.
Yeah. Well, hey, big thanks, Paul, once again, for joining us on here. And, of course, for Andrew Lowe for joining us in the Collector's Corner segment earlier on. Next week, we're going to have Les Wolf on the show. Not sure what we're going to be talking about with him just yet, but if you have any ideas, anything you want to hear us talk about, let us know at ttmcast@yahoo.com. If worse comes worse, I know we've talked to before that he and I need to cover something about everything going on with Fanatics taking over the entire industry pretty much, so we might talk about that here this week. Next week, we're going to be joined by Aaron Littleton as our co-host, as he'll be stepping in again here. We've got a guest co-host 2 weeks in a row here, so hopefully you'll like what he brings to the table here as well, another guy who's been on the show with an interview before. And so I think that about does it for us here this week. We're wishing you many happy returns, and we'll see you next week on TTM Cast.
Everyone, be good.